The first question was about phosphoric acid. Phosphoric acid dissociates three different times. First to make dihydrogen phosphate, then to make hydrogen phosphate, then to make phosphate itself. There are three different Ka values, Ka 1, 2, and 3, which were equal to 7.2 times 10 to the negative 3, 6.3 times 10 to the negative 8, and 4.2 times 10 to the negative 13. You are asked to draw a titration curve showing the pH of the solution as it's titrated. You had to label the axes, the equivalence points, the half equivalence points, and the pH of the solution at each of those half equivalence points. This is a triprotic acid, which means we're going to have three equivalence points and three half equivalence points. Since it is an acid that we're titrating with sodium hydroxide, the pH is going to start considerably below 7. So we'll just start down here low. We come up to our first buffer region, first equivalence point, second buffer region, second equivalence point, third buffer region, third equivalence point, and then it's going to trail off because if we keep adding more and more sodium hydroxide, we just end up with a solution of sodium hydroxide. So on this diagram, each of these steepest points, that's equivalence point, and then in each of the flatter regions, that's the half equivalence point. To find the pH at each of those half equivalence points, we take the negative log of each of these Ka values. As I was saying, if we wanted to know the pH, we just take the negative log of the Ka values at each of those points. And so for the first one, that is 2.14. For the second one, it is 7.2, and for the third one, it is 12.3, 12.4. You did not have to explain the significance of the equivalence or half equivalence point. That was something that was asked in the quiz, but was not part of this problem. So let me just read the question one more time. I think I addressed all the parts. Yes, so questions. No, I just was highlighting that that's the order that the equivalence points are going to occur in. Because the larger the Ka, that means the stronger the acid, that's the one that's going to react first. So that first proton comes off, and that's what that first equivalence point. But no, you didn't have to say 1, 2, and 3. Yes. Any other questions about this problem then? Okay, moving on to the second problem. It said, imagine you wanted to make a buffer solution from sodium dihydrogen phosphate. So that's this one. And sodium hydrogen phosphate. It asks you which of the acid dissociation constants from above should be used for this buffer solution. Well, what were the components in the solution here? The dihydrogen phosphate and the hydrogen phosphate, if you notice, it is the second Ka value that governs that. How do you know which Ka value you're supposed to use? Because it is the Ka for whichever acid is dissociating. So if you're given a solution of dihydrogen phosphate and hydrogen phosphate, it is the dihydrogen phosphate that is the acid, and so that's why you need its Ka constant. Questions about that problem? Yes. Okay, because phosphoric acid, H3, that proton, when it comes off, the Ka value for that is Ka number 1.
Oh, is that for H3?
That's for full phosphoric acid. So everyone look at the dissociation one more time. We have 3 hydrogens, then 2 hydrogens, then 1 hydrogen, then nothing. So phosphoric acid dissociates to make the dihydrogen phosphate that dissociates to make the hydrogen phosphate that dissociates to make phosphate. So each time a proton comes off, that's what a Ka value is for. So Ka1 is for phosphoric acid, Ka2 is for dihydrogen phosphate, Ka3 is for hydrogen phosphate. The fact that I mentioned the hydrogen phosphate is just to clue you into it is the dihydrogen phosphate that's the acid in that acid-base pair. So in other words, we don't use Ka of hydrogen phosphate, the third Ka value, because this is not the hydrogen coming off. In fact, let me write that down for your review's sake. Am I going to have to pull the lecture hall over? Because none of us will go to Disneyland if this keeps up. The noise from the front of the classroom bleeding into the recording. Any other questions about this problem? Next one then. Imagine that you're performing a titration of a weak base with a strong acid. So this is the one place so far where I've switched the normal scenario that we've been talking about. Almost universally, we've always been doing a weak acid with a strong base. As we get closer to the final, we may work a few more problems where we're focused on the weak base instead. So this is just our first taste of that. You're told that in this titration, there are 3 possible indicators that you're given: bromocresol green, bromothymol blue, and phenolphthalein. Let me just list those names out because there's some Ka values that go along with that. So bromocresol green, bromothymol blue, and then phenolphthalein. The Ka values were 1.6 times 10 negative 5, 1.0 times 10 negative 7, and 5.0 times 10 negative 10. Let's go ahead and get the pKa values from that. So the first pKa value is right at about 4.8. The second one, you don't even have to think, it's 7. Because if it's just 1 times 10 to the negative 7th, then it's 10 to the negative 7th. And negative log of 10 to the negative 7 is 7. And then that last one is 9.3. The question says, state which indicator would be the best choice for this titration and explain how you made your choice. As part of your explanation, be sure to state the pH at which indicators in general normally change colors. Indicators change colors when the pH is equal to the indicator's pKa. And notice it's at the pKa of the indicator. At that
when the pH is equal to that. So in other words, it's the half equivalence point of the indicator, not of the acid or base that you're titrating.
So how does that relate to the question? Well, if we were to draw a titration curve, then it would look something like this.
And we did one curve like this before the exam where I did do one problem involving a weak base with a strong acid. That was a numerical problem where this is a conceptual one. Because the equivalence point is still going to be here where you have the steepest change in pH. But relative to that point, where is pH 7 going to be on this graph? On that line, above it, or below it?
Above that. Which means that
when you have a weak base and a strong acid, yes, you're going to end up with an acidic solution at the end. Well, if you're going to end up with an acidic solution at the end point, which is where the equivalence point is roughly, that means we need an indicator that changes color in acidic conditions. Well, one of these is right at neutral, one of these is a basic, and then one of these does change colors in acidic conditions. So the answer is bromocresol green. And again, because that is the only indicator that has its half equivalence point, the point where the pH is equal to the pKa, in an acidic environment.
So since the titration of a weak base with a strong acid produces an acidic solution, an indicator with a pKa less than 7 is needed.
And again, there's only one here, and so it's automatically the best one. It may not be the perfect one, but you weren't given any more specific information. Questions on that problem?
Okay, moving on. It says, imagine that you have available in your stockroom a 1 molar solution, stock solution of acetic acid, a 1 molar solution of sodium dihydrogen phosphate, and sodium bicarbonate. So here we go with a set of pKa values again. So acetic acid, sodium dihydrogen phosphate, and sodium bicarbonate. Ka values here were 1.76 times 10 to negative 5, 6.3 times 10 to negative 8, and 4.7 times 10 to negative 11. You could probably guess that we're going to need pKa values again because we're going to be doing a buffer problem which is going to involve the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation, which as part of that has pKa. So one of these pKas we already have from up above, it was 7.2 for the sodium dihydrogen phosphate. And then let me calculate it. Well, acetic acid I happen to know offhand, it's 4.76. And then the bicarbonate is 10.3. Here's the question. Assuming that you have the appropriate conjugate base available, state which of the three stock solutions would be the best choice for preparing a buffer solution of 10.00 and explain your choice. Well, remember that the best buffer solution is one where the pH is equal to the pKa of that weak acid. You're given pH 10. 10 is much closer to 10.3 than any of these others, so it is bicarbonate that you want to use as your main stock solution. Now, if you chose the wrong one there, I haven't graded the exams yet, but there should be partial credit for the second half because you can still work the mathematical problem even if you started out with the wrong choice. You may get a nonsense answer, and that's what I'm going to find out as I grade these.
But if I can see that you knew what to do, but just started with the wrong number, you're still going to get partial credit. Let me write down that explanation again, though, for why it's that particular solution. So the ideal pH of a buffer solution is when the pH is equal to the pKa of the acid. Since the solution pH is given to you, it's 10.00, it is closest to the pKa of bicarbonate. So the bicarbonate is the best choice of solution. The next part was to continue that. It said if you started with 500 milliliters of this stock solution that you identified, calculate how many moles of conjugate base must be added to the buffer of to create a buffer of solution 10.0. And then during the exam, I did say you could ignore whatever small volume change would occur, although we don't really have to care about the volume change because of the types of units that are involved. What I'm getting at is the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation, which is the best one to use in this situation because we are able to use it. We have concentration of the base and the acid in the expression, but both of these are in the same beaker, you could say. So since the base and the acid are in the same beaker, instead of using concentrations, we are allowed to get away with just using moles. And if all we have to do is calculate moles, we don't care about the volume change that occurs in solution. But I couldn't say that during the exam, which is why I said ignore the change in volume that occurs, because you're going to get the same answer anyways. Now, the pH we want is 10.00. The pKa that we have is 10.3. And so we get that the log of the ratio of the base to the acid is equal to negative 0.3. Now, this is one place where you have to be careful. As I found out in grading the problems of the quiz, which, by the way, section one, if you could stay after, I've got your quizzes that I'll pass back. Section two, you'll get them in the lab. When you want to get out of the log expression, you are going to raise both sides of the equation. You're going to raise 10 to the power of both sides of this equation. And 10 to the log 10 means that that log disappears. Some of you are programmed to do the same thing that you do with pH, which is to stick a negative in. But there is no negative that we put in this case because all we're doing is raising 10 to the same power as both sides of the equation. So in other words, what I saw previously is some of you did something like this. You had log 10 of x is equal to 0.15. And some of you said that x is equal to 10 to the negative 0.15. And that's incorrect, because we're not doing a pH calculation. All we're doing is a log calculation. And I think some of you are programmed, because of the way we do pH, to put that negative sign in. So it is that the ratio of acid to base is 10 to the negative 0.3. That is equal to 0.501, or 1/2 if we wanted to just simplify. Let's see. Given that we only have two sig figs to... Well, no, we don't even have that. We have one sig fig to play with. Let's call it 1/2 to make it easy. So the concentration of A minus is 1/2 that of the acid form. We'd expect that to be true. This is a spot check because we want a little bit more acid than base because the buffer solution is supposed to be pH 10, which is a little more acidic than what the ideal buffer solution would be. And the only reason I'm comparing it to that ideal buffer is because that ideal buffer is where we get that the pH is equal to the pKa. So let's see. It says calculate how many moles of the conjugate base. So we've got concentration to get moles of A minus that is equal to the concentration of A minus times the volume, which I just realized there were two problems where we could assume the volume didn't change. So I was thinking of another problem, but it's still entirely true here. We have a 0.5 liter of stock solution that we start with. Then we have this adjustment factor. And the concentration of A minus is equal to 1. So we get that we need 1/4 mole of carbonate. Does that not match what some of you have got? Yes. It says that you have 1 molar of the stock solution and that you're supposed to add the base to that. So we, if we have... Oh, I wrote the wrong thing right here. This is HA, not A minus. That what might be confusing you. So what was your question? Sorry. Well, no, you got the 0.5 moles from the fact that you had a 1 molar solution and you had 500 milliliters of it. So that's what this first part is. Concentration of the solution, which is 1 molar, volume of the solution, which is 500 milliliters, and then we use the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation to come up with the ratio of that conjugate base with the acid. And it turns out that we need half of the conjugate base versus the acid. So that's why there's this one more factor of 0.5. Did I calculate something wrong?
Could you simplify by having the concentration of the A minus over the concentration of HA simplified to moles over moles? Then you know that you have half mole of the HA, multiply that by 10 to the negative 0.3, you're going to have the moles of A minus. Sorry.
Say that one more time.
Okay, so you have the concentration of A minus over the concentration of the original acid.
Yes. Yes. Right.
Yeah, and so if you simplify that, sorry, if you use it earlier on concentration, figure out you have half a mole of the original acid, and just multiply that by 1/2. So
which gives 0.25. 0.25 times 0.2, or 0.5 times 0.5 is 0.25, right?
10 to the negative 0.33.
Ah, I see. In other words, if you carried out more digits than I did, you're going to get an answer that's very slightly different than 0.25. Yes. Okay. The reason I'm pausing here is because I gave this answer and I saw the reaction of some of the people in front of me, which was, that's not the answer I got. And it turns out that, yes, because this is a log, if you put one more digit out here, if earlier when you converted from your Ka values to your pKa values, you put one more digit in here, it can have a significant effect on what that factor is going to be. And so your answer might be 0.2 or 0.27 or something like that, depending on exactly the value you put into that log. But as long as your math is good, and since sig figs I'm not really paying attention to, then your answer is still fine. Happy now? Okay. Any other questions about this particular problem? The other reason that I'm pausing is it is perfectly possible that I make a mistake. So it's always good just to double check. Yes?
Is it okay to do the log thing where you, since it's division, you just
You have to be very careful. Someone made that mistake in the past where here, let me try to show you what was done. If you have that log of x over y is equal to log of x minus log over, or minus log y, right? So let's forget that it came from this, and let's say that I have log x minus log y, and I'm going to raise 10 by that factor. Is that what you're saying to do? Okay, so you're saying that 10 to the log x minus log y is equal to 10 to the negative 0.3, right? So if you, as long as you were careful in your math, that's fine to do. Here's what I saw on, I guess it was the quiz, that this equation turned into x minus y is equal to 10 to the negative 0.3, which is wrong. Because when you take 10 to the log x minus log y, this is the same thing as 10 to the log x times 10 to the negative log y, which is 10 to the log x divided by 10 to the log y, which is x over y, not x minus y. So as long as you did your logs correctly, you can work it any way you want to. Other questions? All right, then the next one, that's the one where the simplification might help if you did things by concentration instead of moles. It says you're given a buffer solution that it's 0.6 molar nitrous acid, 0.4 molar sodium nitrite. So that's another weak acid-base conjugate pair. You're told that the acid dissociation constant for nitrous acid, 2, is equal to 7.1 times 10 to negative 4. Calculate the pH of this buffer solution. So again, it was 0.6 molar nitrous acid and 0.4 molar sodium nitrite. Well, this first part of the problem is fairly straightforward because, again, if we've got a weak acid-base conjugate pair, we can again use the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation to make our lives simpler. pH is equal to pKa plus the base 10 log of the base concentration divided by the acid concentration. Yet another pKa value, which in this case is equal to 3.15 plus the base 10 log of 0.4 over 0.6. The assumptions made when using this Henderson-Hasselbalch equation is that whatever equilibrium gets established between these two solutions, because realize in real life, you don't really have 0.4 molar and 0.6 molar. You have a little bit less of the acid, a little bit more of the base, because the acid's going to dissociate. So it might look like 0.3994 and 0.6006 or something like that. But we assume that that change is small enough that we ignore it, so we just throw the concentrations as is into the equation. So 2/3, which is 0.4 divided by 0.6, take the log of that. That's equal to, rounded, 0.18. And so the pH is going to be equal to 2.97. All right. Then the next part of the question. Imagine that 1.5 milliliters of concentrated, which you were told that meant 12.0 molar, hydrochloric acid, are added to 200 milliliters of the buffer solution. Calculate the resulting pH. So here is where I was given that little speech before, where we could use moles instead of concentration. That was true in the previous problem, but it's more helpful on this problem because, again, if we're using the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation, then a ratio of concentrations is the same thing as a ratio of moles. But let's see if we can get to that point because this is a neutralization problem. You're told that hydrochloric acid is thrown into the system, but remember that our way of dealing with neutralization problems is to try to get rid of that strong acid or strong base from our problem. So if we had added sodium hydroxide, what we would assume is that the nitrous acid
reacted to give us nitrite. This is going the opposite direction. We've added hydrochloric acid, and so we'll assume that the nitrite had reacted to regenerate nitrous acid. So let's find out our number moles and how they change. Moles of nitrous acid is equal to the 200 milliliters that we start with times the concentration of the solution, which is 0.6 molar. Then it's going to go up by however many moles of hydrochloric acid are added in. We added in 0.0015 liters, that's 1.5 milliliters, of that concentrated acid that had a 12.0 molar concentration. So we get 0.12 moles plus, I don't think I'll try that in my head, plus 0.018 moles, which gives us 0.138 moles nitrous acid. Then we do a similar calculation for the nitrite. We started out with the same 200 milliliters of the buffer solution. This had an initial concentration of 0.4 molar. Because it gets neutralized by the hydrochloric acid, that's why we're going to subtract that number of moles. So we'll subtract that same 0.0015 times 12.0. And so now we'll get 0.08 moles minus 0.018 moles, which is going to be 0.062 moles nitrite. We then stick that into the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation, same one as we used in the first part of the problem. pH is equal to pKa plus base 10 log A minus over HA. I'm going to go ahead and formally rewrite that as the base 10 log of moles A minus over the moles of HA, which is going to be equal to that same 3.15. Now we get 0.062 moles up top. We get 0.138 moles of the acid on the bottom. That is equal to negative 0.35 to round, which means that the pH is now equal to 2.8. Which means it went up a little bit from the ideal solution, which is exactly what we expect because we added hydrochloric acid. It did work as a buffer solution because it didn't change that much. Questions on that problem? Then the last problem, which was practically straight out of lecture. Yes. Yes, you could use ice problems, and you should get the same answer. It just might take a lot longer. And as long as you got the right answer, then you're fine. If you made a small mistake because it's a harder way to do the problem, you'd get partial credit if you messed the math up somewhere in between. All right, the last problem. As I was saying, that was straight out of lecture. It is a select... Oh, question. That is the neutralized solution.
Is that what makes it okay to make the moles proportional?
It's okay to make the moles proportional because we're all in the same pot. So in other words, moles over one volume versus moles divided by that same volume. Because we're taking a ratio of concentrations, that's why we can use moles. So, selective precipitation. Imagine that you have a solution containing equal concentrations of copper 2 nitrate and nickel 2 nitrate. Both cations are very insoluble in the presence of the sulfide ion, which you're adding to this in the form of sodium sulfide.
Given that the KSP, the solubility product of copper sulfide and nickel sulfide, are 8 times 10 to the negative 34 and 3 times 10 to the negative 16, explain how solution of sodium sulfide, this last one here, can be used to separate the copper and nickel ions. Well, these both have identical KSP expressions. KSP in both of these cases is the concentration of the metal ion times the concentration of nitrate squared. And we get that by taking the ions produced by dissociation and raising those concentrations to their stoichiometric coefficients. The reason I chose these two metals is because they do have identical KSP expressions. There is a trick question that can be asked where I could say, here are two different metals, I want to precipitate them, I give you KSP values, but what if one of them is something like silver nitrate, where there's a one-to-one stoichiometric relation between silver and nitrate, versus something like aluminum nitrate, where there's a three-to-one stoichiometric ratio. Then, if I designed it carefully, I could design a trick problem where you end up with a KSP value that looks smaller, but you end up getting more of it to dissolve because of whichever ion that you're adding in. If you're not following, don't worry, because I'm not planning to be that mean, but I'm just explaining, why did I choose two metals that both have plus two ions? So that there's no sneakiness going on in this calculation. The point of it is then, that's not actually the KSP value I care about. Everything I said is still conceptually true, it's just these are the things that are soluble. What they're going to end up forming is copper sulfide and nickel sulfide. That's what the KSP values match up for. So in fact, the KSP is even simpler than that. It is just the metal ion times the sulfide concentration. Which makes it even easier for me to say that since sulfide is being added to both ions at the same time, then whichever ion hits its KSP value first is going to precipitate. Because remember, precipitation occurs when QSP is greater than KSP. Well, if you look at the two KSP values, 10 to the negative 16th, much bigger than 10 to the negative 34. If that confuses you, remember this is a negative exponent. So a smaller negative exponent is a bigger number. So in other words, KSP of the nickel sulfide is much greater than the KSP of copper sulfide, and that means copper will precipitate first. So as you slowly add that sulfide to solution, you can calculate QSP for both copper and for nickel. They will be identical, because you had the same concentration of the two ions in solution. Then you keep adding more and more sulfide, the QSPs for the two compounds are the same. But the QSP for copper will then catch up to its KSP first, and because of that, will precipitate. So the most complete answer is to say that sodium sulfide can slowly be added to precipitate the copper. You can then filter the solution to get the copper out, then add as much sulfide as you want to precipitate the rest of the nickel and to get that out of solution. I've not decided exactly how far in that description you had to get to get full credit. It may be that if you get up to this point, that's enough. But that is the fuller answer, that if you want to separate the two, add enough to precipitate the one and then filter it out, then you've separated it. Any questions? We all do know that there is no class Friday and that there is no class Monday, correct?
Yes.
So you have many days of reading electrochemistry ahead of you, right?
Yes.
So we'll just end, for once, a couple minutes early today.